I am Reese Tisdale, and this is Future Water, in which we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. Today, it's all about Russia and Ukraine and what it all might mean for water and wastewater utilities going forward. Today, I'm joined by Keith Hayes, my partner in crime, to discuss the potential impacts on everything from energy prices and how that might impact utilities to the energy transition and where the opportunities might be going forward, whether it be the impact and influence of renewable power on the water sector, but also just sustainability as a whole and how utilities can insulate themselves from these critical challenges that they face. This is not the only time this has happened. It happens actually different scales, obviously, but all over the world. More recently, we did some research on South African power blackouts and what that meant for water utilities because Eskom was unable to deliver power to water systems in the country. Winter storms in Texas, another good example of the water energy convergence and where things might go wrong when the system and infrastructure is frayed. So, before we jump into the conversation with Keith, I had two things I wanted to share with you. One, Bluefield Research just released a market insight forecasting the U.S. pipe markets, looking at everything from how many miles of pipe are going in the ground, what are the size of those pipes, what are the materials. This also includes everything from manholes, hydrants, valves, and all the accoutrements of the distribution and collection networks, which in the U.S. totals about 4 million miles and will continue to grow with new housing starts. But we also talk about things like inflation and how the forecast might change because of pricing and supply chain constraints. So if you're interested in forecasts, but also of the pipe network in the U.S., this is a good opportunity to get some real insights on what's happening there. Secondly, we're about to release a wrap-up of 2021 M&A and what happened this past year. I'm just going to tell you, I've done a quick review of the draft. It's been a big year. We've counted about 495 water-related acquisitions globally. The takeaway is private water in the U.S. is rolling when it comes to deal count. A lot of small deals, but number of deals was pretty significant. I think represents about 45% of the total deal flow. But also there were $13 billion plus deals in the U.S., which far outpaces what happened last year. There were about four deals in the water sector that exceeded $1 billion. So it's been a big year overall. Like I said, 495 last year. I think the total was about 370 deals. So the market is hot. And depending on what happens with the now current energy crisis stemming from Russia and Ukraine, we'll see how things play out. But those are two things for the listeners to think about and to consider. There will be more information on all of this going forward. So pipe markets and underground infrastructure is number one, and two is M&A and deal flow, globally speaking. So with that, let's jump to the conversation with Keith. All right. So I'm joined here today by my colleague and partner, Keith Hayes. Keith, how's it going?
It's going well, Reese. It's been a very unseasonably warm winter for us over here in Barcelona. So that's been nice. And so just living life.
Yeah, it's been a crazy winter here as well. I mean, I think I may have mentioned last weekend, I woke up, I went skiing, and by the afternoon I was biking outside and it was 50, 55 degrees.
Nice.
So that's kind of crazy for the East Coast. Now it's about to snow a foot tomorrow. So that's going to screw things up for the weekend. But hey, that's the way it goes. But a couple of days ago, we were talking about just the news, really, and what came out of that discussion was this podcast we're talking about today, and that is Russia and Ukraine and what's happening in that part of the world, but also what the potential impacts might be on the water sector, right? I think, you know, when countries, I guess, in this case, which is now timely because it looks like Russia invaded Ukraine this morning before we got on. But no one really thinks about the water industry and what might, how it might be impacted by things such as this. But hey, that's what we do. So I thought we'd jump on this call and have a quick discussion about what do we think about when we see this. So maybe you could give us a little bit of background on sort of the context or what to think about, maybe starting with energy wise, what's the impact of this on the market as a whole?
Yeah, no, I mean, and look, we don't want to overreach here. Obviously, we are not Eastern Europe geopolitical experts, but obviously there are some economic repercussions with such an important energy provider as Russia to Western Europe. So, you know, I'm sitting over here in Spain. Spain draws a lot of its gas from Algeria in the south, but much of the sort of central Western Europe is heavily reliant on the gas supply coming out of Russia, right? And you've already probably seen some charts in the news. You know, there are already, since last year, energy prices in Europe have been going through the roof. In Spain, there was a fourfold increase in the price per megawatt hour since 2021. So we've gone from 50 to over 200 euros per megawatt hour. There are considerable supply challenges that Europe has been facing that have led to rising regional prices for natural gas. You know, the average price was $28.52 per million MMBTUs. That's way higher than it was just last year. And, you know, I think what we're going to see is a steady increase here. Brent crude oil prices as well are at $100 a barrel. And so, you know, it's the fact that this is where the energy and water nexus converge, obviously. Energy is obviously always going to be prone to some of these political shocks, the way that our energy infrastructure and the industry is aligned in terms of supply and demand. And for that, I think what we're looking at here is a period of greater uncertainty and higher cost that is going to be hitting the water sector. And obviously, we know that energy, and I don't want to steal your thunder here, is fundamental to driving the functioning of a lot of our water infrastructure. So, you know, I think we're just coming out of a pandemic now. There's been a lot of runaway inflation. There were supply chain challenges last year and the year before because of shipping capacity. And now we've got a shock to our energy supply over here in Europe. And that is obviously creating a lot of concern. And I think that's why we're talking about it now. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is a little crazy. I mean, I think, you know, you're obviously in Europe, I'm here. And when this came up, I mean, we started talking about, you know, the impacts. And in the US, for the most part, we're awash in natural gas. It's been kind of a crazy energy environment over the past couple of years. But to give some context to it, like you mentioned, if I think the Dutch TTF price is about, which is the natural gas benchmark in Europe, is about $28 per MMBTU. In the US, we're talking, it's at about four, maybe four and a half. Overall, it's going to rise even in the US, and partly because of things like demand for liquefied natural gas and futures prices going forward. But huge difference between the two. And why is that important? Well, over the last decade and a half, globally, natural gas has taken on a larger share of the power mix when it comes to electric power generation, apart from, you know, being used for heating fuels and other things like that in certain markets. But it has been, you know, that's partly because of the shale gale in the US, as they've said, and we've, you know, said in the past, but also just moving towards lower carbon fuels on the way to other things, which we'll get to in a second. So I think that's in Europe, what we're going to see is the collateral impacts of high prices. They've been high for a while. I mean, even in December, Russia slowed some the flow of natural gas into Europe in December. and prices shot up to $60 per MMBTU for a short period. So it's not, the spike has been steadily increasing with declining inventories in Europe. So with that being said, I mean, let's just talk about, as we sort of paint the picture of who or what might be most affected, can we look at which countries might be most affected by any declines in or increases in prices and declines in supply of natural gas?
Yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned before, some have already seen the bar charts out there. I mean, what is the European dependence on Russian gas? Yeah, if they do turn the spigot off. We already heard the other day that Nord Stream 2, $11 billion project, has been pretty much canceled by the Germans, who are the biggest customer for Russia. But anyway, just to paint a picture here, I mean, Czech Republic, Finland, Hungary get almost 100% of their natural gas from Russia. And then from there, you've got Poland, Germany's at about 49% of their gas is coming from Russia. As an average across the 27 EU countries, it's at around 41%. Probably the least exposed here in terms of the larger economies are France, which is at 22%, and Spain, which is at around 10%. And that's because they've got gas lines coming up from Northern Africa. So that's sort of how, you know, you'd expect the alignment's going to be in terms of looking for alternatives from this, which means, you know, I think the other question here is, okay, how much gas, and then what are they using the gas for? Is it for power generation? What's their power mix? As you mentioned before, Reese, you know, there has been an increase in the use of gas-fired generation plant to try and reduce the carbon footprint of the energy sector. So moving away from coal and going towards natural gas. You know, obviously we had the debate around nuclear power after Fukushima happened. Those nuclear reactors were damaged in Japan, and then Europe had a big rethink about what they should do about their nuclear plants. Germany shut a couple of them down. France is about 80% dependent on nuclear power for electricity generation. So, you know, it's obviously, though, still Russia is a major energy supplier to Europe. Europe is a major customer of that gas, and any risk to those supply lines is going to have that ripple effect on the water industry and the way that it uses electricity.
So, yeah, I think that raises a good point. You know, I think, and we've looked at the numbers, places like Italy, their share of natural gas, its share of for electric generation in 1990. I think is the number I saw was about 18%, and now it's up to 48% in 2020. Germany went from, during that same period, 7% to 17%. Germany's kind of in a different place because they've also eliminated coal or moving towards eliminating coal, as well as nuclear. They're moving to renewables. So they're in this sort of middle ground that is definitely a little uncomfortable in their reliance on Russian gas. But I think one thing to think about as a whole is, well, what does this mean for water utilities? And I think water utilities and wastewater, broadly speaking, they rely on obviously electric power for pumping water, for treating water, just moving their product, if you will, from one place to another. And so what role does energy play within the water utilities, particularly in Europe?
Yeah, so it's important. I mean, obviously the features of a water distribution system or a sewer system matter a lot, but we do know that, you know, a report we did a few years ago, OPEX costs attributed to energy for water systems can range between 3% to 22%, and that's having to do with pumping the water. It's having to do with the equipment costs. It's having to do with all the treatment equipment used in different treatment trains, sludge drying. So the blowers are required for that. So, you know, it's a sizable chunk. And, you know, there's a lot of municipalities where one of their hugest energy costs is running their wastewater treatment plant, right? So, you know, we've seen that it's probably around $15 billion a year for Europe's utilities is accounted for with OPEX for running their water systems. And of that, we estimate about 10% of that is probably energy related. So we're talking about, you know, 1.5 to 2 billion annually that is being used just for some treatment plants to run in Europe. And if the cost of that energy is going to double, obviously that's going to be a huge hit to their bottom line.
Yeah. And it's not like water utilities or wastewater system, they can just turn around and immediately raise prices. That's sort of the bad spot that the service providers are in. I mean, that's for the most part globally, you know, the operating costs may suddenly rise in this case, like acutely. And, you know, they can't do the same thing with the rates. Either the rates are fixed over time because they've been agreed upon, or, you know, politically, it's really untenable, right? There'd be, you know, protests in the streets of Paris if they jacked their prices up.
Yeah, no, that's right. And, you know, and I mean, I think as we have looked more and more at industry, you know, we've realized that for industrial water treatment, energy cost is so fundamental to running whatever kind of factory you're talking about, whether it's beer, whether it's a chemical plant, whether it's petrochemical, whether it's a meatpacking operation. So energy is really embedded in the core OPEX cost that they have, right? And so, you know, I think a lot of industries are going to start to feel a hurt now. And what I know we're sounding pretty negative here about what's going on. And obviously there's a huge, huge humanitarian cost that we're very concerned about. I do think there could be, you know, a silver lining longer term here just around sustainability, right? So you mentioned before that the energy sector is trying to decarbonize, and that's focused on, you know, reducing CO2 emissions. But beyond that, how does water fit in that? How do you become more sustainable around water? And for that, you know, I think as Europe tries to move further and further away from fossil fuels, from relying on gas, they try and decarbonize, they can also think about reducing their water footprint, because moving all that water requires a lot of energy, and it's not always going to be renewable. So I think maybe the positive thing that we can hope for out of this crisis is, you know, think even more about sustainability and factoring water more into the decision making there.
This is a good, maybe a good segue into what does the future look like, right? We've talked about this, and I think our research has suggested this in a number of different ways over time, is, you know, what does the future of water look like? This trend has been happening already, right? And it's manifesting itself increasingly through policies, whether it be, you know, green infrastructure policies in Europe compelling, you know, municipalities and water system operators to, you know, deploy more advanced technologies. It could be digital, it could just be basic green infrastructure that, you know, but also just basic asset management, you know, improving existing assets, because leakage is a huge issue, right? So, you know, for every gallon you pump, if you're losing 10, 15, I mean, we see in cases where it's 25% or more for every gallon that goes through the water pipes and they leak, you're paying for something and you're getting nothing out of it in multiple ways. One, you may be even paying for the supply, treating it, polishing it, but also just the energy prices to pump it. So that is happening in some way, but is this an accelerant, right? And this is, you know, like I said, you know, energy prices over the past year, whether it be because of Russian meddling in the natural gas flows or not, they've been on the rise. And there's a clear recognition that decarbonizing the energy sector is going to be critical, and that means moving even away from natural gas over time. But also, the water sector is in a bit of a unique spot. One, it's the lack of water and or supplies, or too much because of flooding, is really a byproduct of climate change. At the same time, it is a contributor as well. And I think whether it be because of the COP meetings or just over time, there's a greater focus on what's the water sector's role in energy usage and how are they doing it? And there are companies that are more focused on that. I think there was a Xylem report that came out in the fall that was saying that globally, the water sector contributes about 2% to, I think, carbon emissions or greenhouse gases. And so there's opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think there definitely is. And, you know, on the municipal side, you know, in the UK, there's been a pretty big push to get to way lower emissions, lower the carbon footprint there. So you've got utilities switching to electric vehicles. You've got them trying to optimize the way that their pumps work. You've got the reductions of non-revenue water. There's all little things that a lot of utilities and also even industrial plants can do to reduce their energy costs and in the process probably be more efficient overall in how they're managing their operations. And rarely is everything fully optimized. It's an ongoing task to you know, maybe first go after the low-hanging fruit of, you know, where do you have huge leaks where you're pumping water and wasting energy and the water itself. But then after that, you know, things start to get more complicated in terms of trying to make sure you're being circular about it as well, right? We haven't talked as much, I think, about, you know, all that can be captured from waste, right? I mean, I think we're going to see more and more capturing biogas from wastewater treatment plants and either using that for self-supply at an industrial plant, or if it's a larger scale municipal plant, maybe feeding that back into the gas network. So, you know, there's a lot to kind of look forward to there. You know, your comment before, is this accelerating it or not? You know, you would think so, right? I mean, because these are forces that we've been thinking about for a while, for the last 10 or 15 years. You know, renewable energy has grown a lot, and, you know, recycling materials has grown a lot. We're all getting much more sensitized to the environmental impacts of a lot of our industries. And particularly with the energy industry, it's been, you know, staring us plain in the face for a long time. And, you know, not just the environmental aspect of it, but the political aspect of it as well. And, you know, sometimes for big decision makers to push forward and helping change the way that an industry functions, you know, you need this kind of crisis to prompt a change.
Yeah. And I think one thing to consider is, and we've had discussions with industry stakeholders about, you know, sure, out in the Western US or in Australia, South America, you name the place, the hot spots where there's drought, you know, there's sort of the up and down and impact on water supplies. But at the end of the day, that it's all related to climate change or greenhouse gas. You know, is that a better message and a better sort of target to zero in on? You know, is really energy the pivot point on which the water sector will really change? And maybe it's a better message because people just expect water to be there and they expect it to be dealt with. But like you said, there's so many opportunities or, you know, treasures in the wastewater, like biogas, that you could pull out biosolids, which is unrelated to necessarily the energy use directly. But then there's also, you know, there's just reuse, right? You're already treating the water. Why not reuse it, either keep it on site or find some off-taker? So with that being said, I mean, you made a good point, maybe looking at, is there anybody to benefit? It was just, I think earlier this month, Veolia and Total Energies out of both French companies announced a strategy to, I guess, partner or collaborate on biogas capture at water and wastewater facilities around the world, definitely across Veolia's footprint, and may even extend beyond that because they see capturing actually methane is even a bigger issue because of its impact on climate change. And so there are business models that are coming out of this. And there is this convergence. We've talked a bit about NextEra, the renewable player in the US, you know, getting into the water sector. They could begin to bridge, you know, water and energy. NW Natural out of the Pacific Northwest is another one. They've even stated publicly, hey, we're going to try to capture at our wastewater facilities, try to capture biogas and turn that into either on-site generation or put it into the grid. So there are real opportunities there. I think one of the challenges has always been there's a project development barriers or hurdles are pretty high, right? You got to bring all these different stakeholders into play. But if companies like Veolia and Total are working together, you know, they each bring core competencies to the table. Veolia really understands the water space, the water sector, whereas Total really understands the energy space. They understand the gas space. You know, so what does that mean for other companies like Repsol or other gas players that may find more opportunities to do this? Another one is just dropping names here is Aqua American and People's Gas in the U.S. That's another one that they've converged. So this convergence is really important. So on the energy space, I see real opportunity there. And what I do think is that the energy sector is starting to point its eye towards the water and wastewater space as an opportunity for growth for them. And so my expectation or anticipation is that they're going to play a big role.
And they definitely should, because, you know, optimizing energy consumption is something they know a lot about. If they're on board with trying to find, you know, fuel alternatives. I do think, you know, the rub is always, though, finding that balance between, you know, price competitiveness and innovation, right? Because a lot of times something new comes on the market and it's super expensive, and the old way of doing things is a lot cheaper, right? Whether we're talking about coal or we're talking about, you know, whatever established conventional energy source you want to mention. And how do you close that gap between, say, wind power or solar with conventional power, right? And the example of, you know, what's going to drive you to do biogas on site at your plant rather than just, you know, buying it off the grid. Yes, sustainability. Yes, maybe for carbon credits, but also because it needs to be price competitive. What's going to make it price competitive if conventional goes up, right? And so ironically, right now, what's happening with gas prices going up, you're making renewable energy a lot more competitive. On the other hand, the reasons it's going up are bad, right? So you do have that sort of issue where, you know, at the end of the day, politicians often have to step in, so that they did when they were subsidizing renewable energy in Europe, for instance, for a while. And you may see that going forward when we look at something further out, like green hydrogen, which we haven't quite touched on yet.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. That's another space or segment that is definitely of interest. And I think in the EU, and I think this was already underway. Well, it definitely was underway, but I think just next week, you know, the EU is going to announce a new sort of renewable target to get away from natural gas, like back to the accelerant. This will give those parties involved all the more reason to just get this over with rather than relying one on natural gas, and particularly a huge supply or one supplier which is a risk to not only, you know, the energy space, but the economies as a whole. I think the other thing is, you know, we've talked about it, like I mentioned, the Xylem report. I mean, they're a pump supplier, right? And they're they are deploying or selling more advanced, you know, pump systems. So, you know, this does create an opportunity for new equipment, new technologies, whether they be connected. They're just smarter, basically, and they're more efficient energy-wise, but also probably even, you know, operationally, management-wise, to deploy. So this is an opportunity, I would say, for the supply chain, the water supply chain, that have more efficient and advanced operating systems.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think there's a lot of suppliers out there where there's the treatment train itself and the heavier equipment you need there, whether you're talking about modules for reverse osmosis or, you know, more efficient pumps. But then you also have this whole aspect of digitalization, which, you know, we've been banging on about for a while, is core to the water industry becoming more efficient. And that is going to have repercussions on energy as well. And, you know, adding, I think, sensor suppliers that can detect leaks, that can optimize pump programming, that can optimize the way that blowers are working at wastewater treatment plants or other energy intensive equipment, for instance, using variable speed drives on larger pumps to optimize the way that they're operating and the wear and tear on them. I think that's definitely a that's definitely going to be an opportunity for all those parts of the supply chain, assuming they're able to get parts and microchips, and a lot of the supply chain issues we have now are going to be sorted out.
Yeah. And I think we haven't even touched upon sort of inflation. There's already high inflation. And so this is not going to help. And if anything, this is going to cause real disruption, because I don't know if people notice on a day-to-day level, like, you know, I got to wait for a dishwasher, or I got to choose a different kind of dishwasher because it's got a microchip in it. And I have, you know, there's sort of hassles there. But when people start going to the fuel pump to put gas in their car, and oil is at $100 a barrel, Brent, and it's even in the US, I would say, if, you know, talking about, we've talked about like energy companies potentially benefiting and supply chain players in the water sector benefiting. This, I mean, the oil sector, particularly the in the U.S., the hydraulic fracturing companies, I mean, talk about nine lives, like Phoenix from the ashes. Every time, you know, 2 years ago, we thought they were doomed and they were all going bankrupt and there was all this restructuring. And quite honestly, they've been slow to roll out more drill rigs, right? So they, even at, you know, $60, $70 a barrel, but now with it at $90, $100 a barrel, there's going to be a real ramp up, not only for oil, but, you know, gas prices are high in the US is what, relatively speaking. So midstream water companies in the oil patch should benefit from this as well. So there's going to be, once again, a renewed focus on, you know, hydraulic fracturing, and really water usage. And that's a huge market that we've looked at since 2013, 2014. And, you know, they're back at it. We admittedly, we struggled after a downturn in 2015, and then it went back up, and then 2020 came crashing back down again. It's been a roller coaster, but it's on the upswing again, it seems like.
Yeah, no, and it's a major, obviously, strategic advantage that the United States has versus Europe, and it's got energy independence, aside from not really sharing a border, despite what Sarah Palin may say over there in Alaska. But, you know, really there's distance there, there's energy independence, and it's going to be probably pretty good for business if you're fracking, you're right. And so on the one hand, that sounds good politically. On the other, environmentally, we know that there's a fair amount of challenges there.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think this is good for the, you know, energy transition, those players like the, you know, renewable majors, you know, the Enels or the Iberdrolas of the world, the NextEras, they're going to benefit, because if there's concern about fossil fuel supplies and prices, you know, and your point about sort of that levelized cost of energy curve, solar is on par with the cheapest fuels out there, and whether it be coal or gas. And so it's a benefit to them. And then will that really push moves towards hydrogen and electric vehicles and battery storage and things like that, which I think it will. That's happening anyways. The question is this just a bit of a more of a nudge? So, well, we've covered a lot of ground. I don't know if you have anything else to add to this conversation. This was a planned podcast, but suddenly became an emergency podcast because of what else is happening. So anything else to add before we jump, Keith?
Yeah, I mean, I think just, you know, we should all probably keep in mind that even though this may seem like something that's far away for some of our listeners out there, it is going to have a ripple effect. There are going to be some opportunities out of it in terms of making us hopefully rethink things in the longer term. But in the meanwhile, let's hope as many people are safe and sound as possible.
Yeah. So keep an eye on the news, and obviously if things change, but, you know, our perspective is the water sector as a whole. So whether it be municipal or industrial, so it'd be interesting to see how, and usually that takes a little while to put, particularly the municipal sector, it takes a little while to play out and digest and make its way through the system. So to the extent people are thinking about it, we'll see. So this is all pretty fresh. So, all right. Well, that being said, that's what I would call a wrap. And Keith, thanks for jumping on, particularly pretty last minute. And I will see you. We're almost to March, so I'll see you in Barcelona pretty soon. That'll be nice.
All right. Always a pleasure.
All right, man. Take care. See you soon.
You too.
All right. So, good conversation. Be interesting to see how everything develops. But before we go, please subscribe to this podcast. You can always take advantage of Dave McGimsey's The Water Bayous podcast also. It's another good one. He invites outside guests to have interesting conversations about what else is happening in the water industry. Secondly, send us a note at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com with any topic ideas or suggestions for us to discuss. Happy to follow up with you, but hey, we're doing this for you, not us. And tell a friend about it. Still in a pandemic, I guess I'm going to keep saying that. So with that being said, this podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Be well, be safe, take care, and talk soon.